kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show lined up. A lot of reviews we got to take care of. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
A lot better compared to last week. The mucus is still flowing, but the dizzy spells, they is a going.
That's
I
good.
I appreciate that. I got back in the kick of it by going to the gym 2 days in a row, something I've never done since I joined. But desperate times call for desperate measures. Getting back in the swing of things is most important. Also, I'm still eating cereal off of board game boxes, but what else is new?
You and your board games, man. Did you get any new board games this weekend?
Oh, thank God, no. No. I got the two games from WBC last time before I recorded with you. And besides that, I've been holding off some serious restraint because I want more stuff. But then I realized, where the hell is it all going to go? Space is at a premium now. So
yeah.
It has to be something I really want. Or I have to move something out before I can bring something in. Not to say I couldn't, but it would be irresponsible to do so. Which means I'll probably have new board games next month. Because it's just kind of a guy thing.
And not only is space at a premium, but like we're starting to get into the heavy time of year with video games.
That is very true. Which, to be honest with you, when it comes to video games at this point, since I started doing reviews and everything, it's always a heavy time. Like, it's interesting when you think about it. There's the AAA holiday season, which everybody holds up, you know, gets prepared for and stuff. But I've gotten used to the fact that good games drop all year long.
Oh, they definitely do.
You honestly get no breather. And it's an interesting medium when you think about it, too. So you figure, and this came up recently because somebody posted a video, some internet personality, about how he was kind of done with his classic video games. And I don't know where I saw that, but I ended up looking at it. And I kind of understood where he was coming from in the sense that he was saying, I don't have time for my old stuff anymore. I want to play new stuff. Holding on to my retro stuff is almost meaningless because I'll never play it. Just keeping up with the Switch alone is killing me. So he was talking about, you know, unloading his classic games and blah, blah. And it kind of hit me in that regard, too, where it's like, I bounce around a lot with games. I play a lot of retro games. I do review games. And I kick along with other games here and there. I play a lot of games. But for the average Joe, it's a constant sea of drowning in games. Like, you'll never, ever be without. And when down to trying to maintain the means of keeping up with it all, it's even more brutal because unlike, say, think of a TV show medium or the film industry, you got folks who are like, let's have a movie marathon weekend, yay! And they'll spend a Saturday and a Sunday with popcorn and friends, and they'll watch like 10 classic films. That's 10 different universes, 10 different sets of actors, 10 different ratings. They get to consume it in its entirety, all 10 films. And you can do that every weekend and just gorge on film. TV shows, yeah, it's a bit more of a time sink, but even still, you can be like, hey, I'm going to watch Orange is the New Black. I'm just going to say it because it's new right now. Like, hey, final season just came up, but I never started the show. Well, I guess you better binge it. And the person just spends the whole damn week watching the entire show. And they just eke it out, no problem. So it's like, you can just knock out all these things whenever you want. But you talk about a video game, though, you're like, hey, man, I'm trying to think of a franchise. Okay, here we go. The Trails series, because you know how much I love those games. Like, the Trails series, man, you should look into those games. Oh, man, I would love to, but I've never started them. Well, then, you need to go back to Trails of the Sky, Part 1. Then Trails of the Sky Part 2, and then Cold Steel Part 1, and then Cold Steel Part 2. Now, each of those games is going to run you 60 to 100 hours, and then you got to worry about if you miss something. Yeah, at that point, you're like, shit, I want to do that, but I'm also playing the games that I'm probably going to talk about in this episode. Or I was going to say a name of a game. I was like, wait a minute, that'd be spoiling the reviews. But like, or just like any number of other games they could be playing. One game could consume you for weeks, whereas you can watch like 3 TV shows consecutively, no problem. None of them overlapping, no problems. So it just gets you to thinking, like, where is it going? Like, we gamers just consume. We just consume new stuff. And the board game industry is like that too, I realize, which is an interesting element. So you ever heard of a person that will tell you, nah, you buy way too many games, man. Me, I'm a consumer, or I'm a connoisseur. I'll buy one game and I'll just wait till I'm done it. And then maybe I'll go get another game. Like I'm sure you've got a couple of friends that talk like that, right?
Oh yeah.
So think about that. So you have friends, and there's other people just like this out there where they'll buy maybe two games a year because that's all they got time for. And they don't collect, they don't amass a backlog. So think about that. And then you realize something. If every gamer worked like that, this industry would fail. It couldn't handle it. It could not exist on people who play one game at a time alone. Couldn't do it. Too much comes out at one time for multiple companies, and for all those companies to be able to stay afloat, despite if they make good games or not, people have to amass and hold on to games they may never play. They have to.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's board games, video games. They're both like that. They pretty much require people to amass a wealth of product that they probably will never use. And that's what keeps the industry afloat. Just think of the holiday season. Any holiday season in the last like 10 years. And how many great games come out over the course of 4 months. Big, meaty, AAA games that take 50 hours of your time apiece. They all come out in the same block of like 3 months, maybe four. And it used to be that way. It used to be all in November. Not anymore, though. And then you're like, okay, well, I want to get these five games. Each of those five games is going to hit you for 40 hours minimum. That's a lot of time in your life when you got work, family, TV, movies.
Podcasts.
Podcasts. You know, how do people keep up? They don't. They don't. And if they do, I'm freaking amazed, man. I'm really amazed. But that's the nature of the beast. It's an interesting industry. How in the hell did I go off on this tangent? I don't know, but that's just what I do. But I just think about that a lot. I really do. But at the same time, despite saying that, I love the fact that the industry has reached a point where if you want a certain type of game, more than likely, not all the time, there are a few weird exceptions. There's maybe one cooking battle game out there, maybe two. But it's more than likely if you want a type of game, premise, gameplay style, whatever, it's already out there. Someone's already made it, and you can experience it. Is there stuff that still hasn't been done? Of course there is. Of course there is. But
not much, but there is.
Yeah, exactly. Not much. I mean, like, I'm trying to think of something right now. Maybe like a turn-based strategy cooking game. There you go. There you go. It's a cooking game where you're fighting the ingredients, which then have to be cooked. Once you kill the ingredients, you have to cook them. And then the food that you prepare becomes weaponry to use against the other food that's on the mat.
And then the cooking section, dating mini game.
Boom! See that? Now, if someone's listening, like a developer's listening to this, they're like, there's some weird shit going on there, but just jot the main premise down. They got something there. Because I'm telling you, that shit will work. And I just came with it on the fly, too. Just this weird thought of, you know, culinary kitchen chaos. And it's just like real, like Fire Emblem, but with food. Chefs killing food. Or food killing food. But then that's just disturbing and cannibalistic. I don't know if I want to do that. But still, an interesting premise for a game. I would play that shit. I would play it big time. So even with, especially with the dating sim element, you can date broccoli. It'd be the blandest date you've ever had in your damn life until you get to like the social rank level 7 and you learn to season her, and then all of a sudden, bam! Oh my God, who knew broccoli could be so spicy? Grrr.
Uh-oh, it's their cousin cauliflower.
What are you doing here? I thought we were dating till Thursday.
Oh, I'm Jesus.
Like, you culinary son of a bitch. I caught up to you.
Celery told me everything. Us?
We're drunk. Actually, I'm not drunk, but if I were, this would be even stranger.
Yeah, I wish I was.
Nah. Just think about it. A lot of people, so many people need substance abuse to be this ridiculous. We can do it sober. That's a gift.
Yeah. Okay. We are special in many ways. We are special.
Damn right. I'm sorry. I have my complaints where I'm always like, man, sometimes I wish I were a little more normal so that these dating apps and junk would be easier to maneuver. But then in the day, I like being ridiculous. I like being wacky. This is fun shit. You get into conversation with people and they don't even know how to handle you. I had a chat with somebody at work about, what's that damn show? Black Mirror. The new season came out a couple months, maybe 2-3 months ago, which I guess doesn't make it so new anymore. And there was that episode about the fighting vipers or whatever, the fighting game, the one everyone was talking about. Have you heard of it?
No.
All right, so long story short, fighting game is VR. Spoiler alert, the major premise is that it's VR, two dudes start making out in the game as their VR characters, like a guy and a girl character. And it gets interesting. You start to wonder, how in the hell is this going to play out? Because there's like families involved and nah. So coworker was like, Pernell, you got to watch this show. Yeah, so what you think of this show, you'll it'll mess with you. I'm like, all right, sure. So, you know, being me, I booted the show up and I dove way too deep into it because that's what my weird ass does. I overthink everything. So when I came into work the next day, I'm like, she's like, did you watch it? Did you watch it? I was like, yeah, I watched it. And waited for her to ask me like what my thoughts on it were. And when she finally did, I gave her my thoughts, which was very deep commentary on like my belief that, okay, this episode was clearly meant to discuss, you know, like gender normalities and stuff like that. And whether or not, you know, where does attraction end and begin it? You know, in regards to like they had an affection for each other in the game because it was a guy and a girl, but in real life they didn't have affection for each other because they're a guy and a guy, which means they weren't sexually attracted to each other, but they had the actual emotional chemistry that if they were gay, they would have clicked. But since they weren't gay in the real world, they didn't click. And I went down this whole dialogue about it. And her brain stopped at, oh, they gay. So the moment I went on my little ramble raid, she couldn't keep up. And all of a sudden I was like, you weird, man. Are you trying to say they weren't gay? I'm like, the episode went the extra mile to tell you they weren't gay. Nah, man, they gay. What you talking about? That's weird talk. Like, so what the hell did you ask me my thoughts about it for? If all you wanted me to say was they gay, then what the hell was the point of watching an hour's worth of TV? Yeah, I could have got that from anything. Like, that's boring. But she wasn't having it. So I was like, you know what? New rule. I ain't talking to coworkers about shit if it ain't in the books. We need to be alone. I'm done. And then like a week later, I'm talking about stuff because I couldn't help myself. And I started to kind of embrace the fact that I was the weird guy in the office. I didn't even give a shit. If you can't fire me for it, I'm going to be weird as I can get. Don't care. Don't care.
If you can't fire me for it, I'm going to be as... Oh, that's beautiful. That's poetry, Pernell.
Yeah, man. It's all about owning what you got. I'm a wacky dude. End of the day, I'm weird as shit, but I'll take a bullet for my friend. That's the logic behind it. It's like, who doesn't want weird friends? Now, don't get me wrong. If I was walking around in freaking, like, weird, like, Stalin coats and, like, bending forks. For the record, I knew a guy who walked around in that kind of coat, and he did bend forks. You know what I'm hearing? Like, he's fucking weird on the wrong end of the spectrum. But if you just got a guy who just, like, reads up on crazy shit and says wacky jokes at the drop of a hat and just weird in just the non-conventional normality sense, hold on to those fuckers, because they're a dying breed and an awesome breed worth your time. And they could talk your head off if you give them a chance to. And they'll talk to you about stuff that you're not prepared for, which makes the dialogue entertaining. No
like
more of that.
Board games.
Oh, I will melt your brain talking about some damn board games. You want to get into some play mechanics and some, I don't know, just differences in like play styles and strategies. I'll get it in. I will get it in. It's my wheelhouse, baby. Though I will never bring it up to somebody unaware, because my personal belief is that everyone thinks board games are for dorks. And if you bring it up, you're like, what the fuck you talking about, man? This ain't cornhole. Shut up. Like, well, I don't want to play cornhole, so tell me. Because I'm still that guy. One day I'm going to break cornhole. I'm going to find something that people will play that is not cornhole. It's not that it's stupid. It's that I'm tired of it. There's other games. Can you imagine having stacks of game options, dexterity-based games, puzzly games, yell out the top of your lungs type games that you could always break out at a moment's notice, which means that activity at parties will always be popping in some way, shape, or form. And then you get to the party, and it's always the same thing. Take these bags, throw them into those holes. Every single time.
But I like that.
I do too, but it's like, take it to the video game perspective. You play tons of games throughout the year. Now imagine every time you went to a party, all people were doing was playing Madden. That's the only game they played ever. New iteration of Madden is pretty much like cornhole with new colored paint, like new painted boards. It's the same game, but True. It looks a little jazzier. You know, you'd get tired of it. You want new shit, but people don't stop. It's always cornhole and beer pong. But my one friend kind of fixed that by he set up a beer pong game where he used trash cans and basketballs instead of plastic cups. So that one I got into because I started like lobbing the basketball across his backyard and like barreling it into the trash can, like nailed it. See, that's how you do it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It's a lot of fun. I honestly do enjoy that. Like if they set up traditional beer pong, I want no part of it. They set up that beer pong, oh, I'm fucking in, and I will play it. I'll probably play it all day because who doesn't like it's one thing to say I'm going to throw a beanbag across the court, but I do enjoy that from time to time. But who doesn't like taking a freaking large ball and just like barreling it across at some point, trying to knock over the cans practically? It feels so good. Who doesn't want to do that? Don't answer that. But it's a good time. It's definitely recommended. Like, I love it.
Oh, man. Speaking of good time, should we get to the business at hand?
I always look forward to waiting for your segue that you come up with. Speaking of Roly Poly Fresh and Frolies, speaking of fruit snacks, speaking of cornhole, there's a game that has nothing to do with cornhole.
Speaking of wacky shit, how's that?
There we go.
Because you've got some weird ones to talk about this week.
Yes, I do.
You ready to get started?
It's party time.
All right.
Mr. President.
Not yet. Not yet. That's the next one. First game to talk about tonight is called Wolfenstein Youngblood, developed by Machine Games, published by Bethesda Softworks, released July 26th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $29.99. 19 years after the events of Wolfenstein 2, BJ Blazkowicz disappeared after a mission into Nazi-occupied Paris. Now, after years of training from their battle-hardened father, BJ's twin daughters are forced into action. Purnell, tell us about Wolfenstein Youngblood.
It's kind of interesting that the descriptive is that they're forced into battle, but what actually happens is they just kind of steal a ship and just go because they're like, we got to find our dad. But no one's like, you girls need to go. They're like, no, fuck this. We're going. We're going to do this. But
girl power.
Honestly, this game was so there was a lot of flack that was coming at Wolfenstein Youngblood when it was first announced, primarily because it was stepping away from the traditional style of Wolfenstein games and going more to like a side story co-op first person game. But I actually have to say, in the time I spent playing this game, I found it to be very enjoyable. The way the game works is that the twin sisters, which you choose one of at the beginning of your gameplay session, they don't differ at all. They're just, you know, different skins and I think that's why they were like, hey, they're twins, so they're identical. But you choose one of them, and then they pretty much kind of throw you right into the fray of the game, which starts you off on an introductory mission aboard a blimp where you have to assassinate a particular individual in order to join the group that will allow you to pursue leads on finding your pop. So what ends up happening is the game will throw you on this thing, and it immediately gets you acclimated to how the game is going to work. The gameplay style consists of pretty much a typical first-person shooter style game. You have a weapon wheel where as you find different weapons, you pretty much collect it and you own it. So it's not like you have to buy them at a store or anything like that. It's just once you find a weapon for the first time on the ground, you keep that weapon. And it goes to your weapon wheel and you can select them at will. And as long as you have ammo for it, you can fire the gun. You can pretty much merc dudes. You have your co-op partner who, if you're using the computer, they will pretty much be, of course, operated by the computer, but humans can kind of back you up as well. And they're pretty much going to work as your cover fire, your backup fire. And also in the event that you get knocked down by you running out of life, they can come and resurrect you or pick you up off the ground before you bleed out. You get 3 bleed outs total if you don't get rescued. And if you run out of bleed outs, you are kicked back to the start of the area that you were in to renew the mission, to do the mission anew. However, even though I mentioned you get 3, throughout different the different areas, there are certain chests you can locate where when both players are next to it, you can pretty much push a button to open it up, and it gives you an extra life. So, it's nice because you'll come across a chest like, we need the chest, get your ass over here, hurry up. And you're like, okay, man, hold your horses. Like, I got no horses. Hold it, hurry up. We need life. So you'll spend a lot of time doing, like, you'll be pretty much running around taking care of that kind of stuff. And there's also the typical, you know, like, this door needs to be helping these 2 people to open it up, or this, elevator needs two people to, you know, activate it, blah, blah, blah. So you have to have you have to coordinate to get the places together in order to get things done. There's also a few other little interesting, like, co-op-y elements of the game, too. Like, you might occasionally come across a scenario where you have to unlock a door, and it requires a code. But the code can only be displayed to be entered if another person is at a terminal across the map. Maybe not really far across the map, but, you know, far enough away that you're not together. So they can actually hold down a lever, which will trigger the code's display, and then the person at the keypad can enter so that the door will open up. So you'll have situations like that, and also just moments where you kind of want to remember stuff and then convey it to the other partner and stuff like that. So the interesting thing about this game that I will say beyond the norm of co-op games is that there's something they added called pep powers. What a pep power is like a sort of activation thing that you can pull off where if the sisters are in close enough proximity to each other and you activate the pep power, you'll get a certain perk. So, for example, at the beginning of the game, you start out with the ability to either give each partner, each yourself and your partner, 25 bonus health or 25 bonus armor. So it could come through in a pinch when you use it. And then after you do it, it's just a certain, there's like a small cooldown period, and then you can do it again. But then as you acquire, you know, from, you know, currency in the game in the form of silver coins, you can purchase new pep powers and use those instead of the ones you get from the beginning of the game. And I got to say, there's a couple of them that are just borderline broken. Not to say they're going to make the game completely a complete cakewalk, but they'll make life tons easier. Like, I had one, which I'm not sure if it was because I had the deluxe package or not, where when you use it, you get full armor. And there's one that was full health, but it cost 2,500 coins to get it.
Damn.
So it's so, but when you get that, but I did buy that, that armor one. And I also bought one where you can resurrect your partner who's bleeding out from across the map. So you don't have to be like right next to him. You can be like, okay, I see you, but I can't get to you. Metal horn. And like, okay, then get up.
Instead of helping them up, you're just like across the room. You're like, get the fuck up.
That was a perfect way to work the sound there, by the way. But exactly. You're pretty much yelling at him to get up off the ground. It's perfect. And my friend that I was playing with had a penchant for getting knocked down in very precarious spots. Like, I can't get the hell in there. You're in a bad zone. I'm like, I got to buy this power. So I'm like, get the fuck up. And he gets up and it's glorious. I will say I like those pep powers. Even like I said, they feel a little broken in the sense of like they make it easier to get out of situations that in other fighting shooting games you would not have that access. I will say just that feeling of like, okay, I'm close enough to you. I got your back. Metal horns or fighting stance, and now all of a sudden we're invincible for 10 seconds. It's just a nice feeling to have that in the game. Now, something I need to address, because I've seen it come up in dialogue across the internet. Bethesda has become fairly well known, along with some other companies, for microtransactions. You know, the means of getting people to pay money to get stuff. Now, yes. I'm not going to go into the psychology of it all, which is that to say that, you know, despite what the microtransactions are, it's a detriment to someone who has like a compulsion to spend money. That's something else, which I do acknowledge exists, but that's not what I'm here to talk about today. What I will talk about is what microtransactions are in the game. And I feel like the hate in this particular game is way overblown for what those microtransactions are. So in the game, you find silver coins, which can be used to upgrade your guns, which I actually will talk about shortly because I really didn't talk about it yet. But to upgrade your guns or to upgrade your pretty much like your pet powers and stuff. There's also ability points, which can be used to upgrade your abilities, which I'll talk about in a second, too. Because holy cow, how did I get to this tangent? Oh, because of how I talk. but then there is cosmetic stuff. Your characters have power suits on. Power suit includes the suit itself and the helmet. And while you start out with these pretty basic outfits, you can buy new outfits in the game by spending silver coins or, in some cases, an additional currency called gold bars, basically stealing Nazi gold bars. Which, for the record, if you're killing Nazis and looting their stuff, of course you're going to steal gold bars they got lying around. Why the hell would you leave it there? It's gold, damn it. But anyway, the point is gold bars. So you can use the gold bars to unlock new costumes, new helmets, and new outfits. But there's nothing in the game that you can't buy using currency that you pick up across the ground. I'll admit, I can't fathom wanting to spend hard-earned coins on costumes when those coins can be used on upgrading my character, but some people might want to do that more so. But the way I play the game was basically saying, you know what, default gear is fine. I don't really give a crap. I'm all about just playing through the game proper and unlocking my stuff, whatever. Yeah. But the point is, the the purchasable currency is only used for cosmetic stuff. It's not used for boosters. The boosters that do exist in the game are purchased using actual silver coins as well. And you can't purchase them with gold bars, only with silver coins. But it's only the gold bars are only used for cosmetics, which to me is, if you're going to shoehorn purchasable content into a game, I am honestly of the ilk that cosmetic is the best route you can take with it.
Yeah.
Because some people are going to buy it, and that's going to net you your extra money. If you're like basically just trying to play the game, you don't have to buy your way to victory. This doesn't require you to do that, and it makes the game playable without having to worry about that if that's not your cup of tea. It's a good way to go about it. And if companies want to keep doing this, I prefer to go this route, if anything at all. Just make it cosmetic junk and keep it out of the gameplay. I'm fine with
cosmetic
that.
Microtransactions, I could definitely live with. I'm glad to hear that, like, the upgrades and the abilities and the weapons, nothing there is related to microtransactions.
I concur, because as you know, if they were, I'd have been bitching about it right now. So I don't mess around with that. I pay serious attention to that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's only for cosmetic stuff, and I'm fine with that. Now, the thing I totally just jumped over, because I went down that rabbit hole because I wanted to get it out of the way, is the other upgrades you can buy. So you can actually upgrade your player character in the form of three categories: mind, muscle, and power. Mind involves upgrades that pale to your health total, your stealth abilities, because you can kind of sneak around with like a cloaking device on if you have the ability unlocked. So basically those sorts of things. And also occasionally a few abilities that will make it easier to find map collectibles and stuff. Then there's the muscle. Muscle involves upgrading your armor, your throwing ability in the form of I call them fine throwables, like daggers and junk like that. How far you can throw them and how much you can stockpile. And also grenades too. And then there's big guns. Unlike the other guns I mentioned before where they go into your wheel well, big guns, you grab them off of dead enemies that are lugging them around. And they're just kind of one-time use things. You grab it, you walk around with it, you fire it until it's out of ammo, and then you drop it and you keep moving. But you have to unlock the ability to grab them first, then the ability to get full mobility while you have them, and so on and so forth. So you're just basically buying the means to become better using the guns. And lastly, there's power. And that ties into the starting skills you can get being, again, the cloaking device and also charge attack, which can be used to destroy crates and knock enemies over and stuff like that. So you'll be spending ability points that you earn through completing missions or just leveling up to unlock those abilities. And then there are the guns. Every gun that you find can be upgraded in five categories: the receiver, the sights, the magazine, the muzzle, and the stock. And when you get those guns, each of those have their upgrades available for purchase immediately. So long as you have the money, you can upgrade your gun. And each upgrade for each of those categories comes in three other categories. It sounds complicated, but it really isn't. Trust me. It just seems like it at first when you're playing the game. The categories that exist are natal, which focuses on accuracy, tempo, which focuses on fire rate, and stire, which focuses on damage. Spoiler alert, I never use those damn names. I use accuracy, fire rate, and damage because I ain't got time for weird names. And so let's say, for example, you want to increase accuracy on your sniper rifle. So you'll go to the scope, or rather the sight, and you'll upgrade it with a natal component, which will boost its accuracy and possibly give you like a modifier such as like red light scope or x-ray vision or something like that. So you'll pretty much use that concept when it comes to buying all the upgrades for your guns. Now, if you get three upgrades across those five types or those five areas for the same typing, either accuracy, fire rate, or damage, you'll unlock a bonus perk. So the game kind of incentivizes you to kind of go hard on one of the upgrade types and then kind of intersperse the other two as you see fit, just so you can have that extra perk on all of your guns. What that means is that throughout the time you're playing the game, you will be constantly upgrading something, whether it's your character or your firearms or even your pet powers, or if you just really want to, even your boost, which I never bother with the boosting. I'm just going to play the game. But you'll always be upgrading something as you play the game. Though I kind of chuckled at the fact that there's also collectibles throughout the map, like 3D glasses, which unlock models and documents and stuff like character art and concept photos. But and also the usual dialogue, like, you know, stuff like, you know, Nazi notes and scientist records and crap. But when you're playing a COD game, no one's going to stop in the middle of the action and go, "I'm going to read this document. Hang on, man. I got to read this manifesto." No one's doing that. You're going to keep moving. You're going to keep blowing things up. But it's still cool to just kind of be like, hey, I'm meticulous. I found this stuff and I want to read it when the co-op is done or when we're back at the main hub base or whatever. So I've rambled a ton about this game, but one last thing I want to say so I can finally wrap this up is that the gameplay flow consists of you trying to take down three different, let's call them brothers, that hold the key to you shutting down this organization that's possibly going to have leads on locating your dad. Because that's the organization that he was, you know, looking to defeat when he went over the pairs. So even though you would expect the typical game to consist of levels, as in beat one stage, go to the next, and go to the next, this game doesn't work that way. The way the game flow actually works is there are different sections of Paris you go to, but you won't just plow through one section at a time. What will happen is you'll go there, you'll probably knock out a mission that someone gave you, which will lead you to getting information back at the base, which will take you to another location in Paris. And you're going to be moving around a lot until you can ultimately get the information and levels required to storm the brothers' fortresses and beat the tar out of them on their home fort, on their home ground. Now, not to say you couldn't, in some cases, just steamroll it and get in there, but the first time you find a giant mech that starts blasting you from across the street, and they're killing you in like two shots and you don't know how the hell to deal with them, you're probably going to be telling yourself, maybe I should go to another area right now instead of beating my head into this wall, which I'm fine with. Some people might want to do that, but other people are going to do like I did with my friend and say, screw that, we're going to do other missions and come back later when we've leveled up a bit more. So, but either route is something that you can embark on. You're not really punished for either. It's just a matter of, do you want to suffer a little harder because the game is harder this way? Or do you want to just kind of bounce around and explore all the areas and take on the different missions and the like? Yeah. So, but I could keep rambling about this game, but I don't think I want to keep here all night. Really good. And honestly, I feel like graphically the game is fine. I didn't have any real issues with clipping or slowdown or nonsense like that. No freezes or anything. At worst, the worst I can say is that on boot up, I felt like the game took a little bit of time to boot up proper. So like what getting that initial, you know, startup, but that could have just been like patches or something for all I know in some cases. So that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Well, as it stands for $30, what's your verdict?
I personally find it to be a quality buy. It was a lot of fun. Now, I admit, if you don't have a co-op partner, that buy it is a tentative try it because depends on how happy you feel running around with an AI partner. But I will at least tell you that AI is competent. So this is an escort mission territory here. You have to have a competent gameplay partner.
That's good. And if you don't have someone to play with, but you have a friend who wants to play with you, they just don't have the game, the deluxe edition of the game comes with a buddy pass for you to play the game through with someone who doesn't own it.
And I'm going to tell you, that innovation is one of the smartest damn things in gaming I've come across in ever. Mm-hmm. Can you think, that was part of what made the DS so awesome to me, the fact that you could buy a game with one cart and then play with people who don't have it, which means that you're not stuck begging your friend to buy the game you want to play with them.
Yeah.
So, yes, get that buddy pass and play with your friends.
Do it up for an extra $10. Get that buddy pass. But next game to talk about is called Metal Wolf Chaos XD, developed by From Software, published by Devolver Digital, released August 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $24.99. The country is in peril as President Michael Wilson defends the nation against a full-scale rebellion led by Vice President Richard Hawk and the mechanized legions he commands. Battle in your advanced mech armed to the teeth across iconic American landscapes, including the Brooklyn Bridge, the Grand Canyon, and the front steps of the White House. Purnell, tell us about Metal Wolf Chaos.
I can tell you that this game had a bit of a legend to uphold for me.
Oh, yes. When,
many years ago, I had a buddy who would not shut up about this game. He would constantly quote it. He would talk about how awesome it was. He would make the usual line, which honestly I feel is even better to say now than it was back then, which we need a president like this more than ever. Michael Wilson for president. And that kind of led me to believe I got to try this game someday. It sounds really freaking awesome. And now we've got it. Though,
yay.
First thing to point out, just to get that out the way and let people know, this is an Xbox OG port. This is not like they didn't take the game back to the drawing board and redo it with hot visuals and all that junk. This is pretty much the game you would have played on the Xbox.
It's not now, a remake. It's a remaster.
Exactly. And knowing that, it's easier to talk about the game proper. So this game is fucking hysterical. I don't know what they were thinking with some of the lines they came up with for this game, but for the most part, you are the president piloting a mech, and you are fighting an insurgent force led by the vice president, because, man, talk about a weird scenario where you chose the shittiest vice president option to get on your ticket. What was he thinking? Anyway, you are piloting this mech with the president, and you're fighting an insurgency across the United States, and throughout the entire adventure, you are in communication with your secretary over intercom, whose name is Jody. And you have such wonderful statements, such as the president saying, "Hey, Jody, what do I have on my schedule today?" And Jody goes, "Well, sir, you have a meeting with the Japanese prime minister in regards to a wildlife conservation effort." And he goes, "Well, we'll have to cancel that appointment today, Jody, because today I have to save America." And yes, it sounds cheesy because it is cheesy, but that's what makes it good. The cheesiness in this game is a damn winner, and it helps that the gameplay itself, in my opinion anyway, is honestly quality as well. What you're doing is that you pop the mech, you're usually embarking on a stage-based mission, which typically revolves around blowing a bunch of crap up, which, hey, what you want to do. Now,
sounds on like each a winner
level,
to me.
Damn right. And as you go on each level, your mech is outfitted with up to 8 different weapons, 4 on the left side and 4 on the right. You press the B button and then use the triggers to rotate between those 4 guns on the left and the right. And then when you let it go, or press B again rather, boom, you're equipped with a new gun. So you'll spend a lot of time dashing and jumping as you switch to the right gun for the job to blow things up. And there's a lot of different types of guns: shotguns, missile launchers, bazookas, handguns, machine guns, assault rifles. There is a plethora of gun types in this game. Some you'll likely be using more than others. Like, for example, I use the pistol only when I feel as though I need to just conserve bullets for my better guns, because it's a pistol. Why am I going to use a pistol regularly when I have a damn assault rifle in my pocket? Commentary for him. Anyway, so this game, you'll be pretty much switching between the guns as needed in order to take care of business and use the right gun for the right job. Sometimes you'll be fighting heavily armed tanks and planes, which will require you to use your heavier firearms, such as rocket launchers and missile launchers. And other times, you'll be fighting lighter fare, like soldiers on the ground. Or you might need to be rescuing a bunch of POWs, which are strewn across the map. And if you use, I should get into that in a second. But anyway, point is, there's other scenarios where you'll be using lighter arms, like guns and, again, Uzis and the like. Now, on each level, there will also be POWs that are locked up in cages, which you'll need to free, because they're like kind of the collectible for the stages, as it were. So if you see a cage with prisoners inside, POWs they call them, you have to free them by blowing up their cage, but you can't use heavy arms to do it because you'll kill them if you do. So you have to use like but then you're using a freaking assault rifle to blow up the cage, and then you overhold the button so you're spraying them afterwards and they don't die, but whatever. So after that, they get up and they're free. And each type of person you rescue unlocks a different thing. Like, for example, if you rescue a musician, it unlocks music you can play in the sound room. Or if you save a scientist, it goes towards research, which will be used to discover new weapons that you can equip to your fighting mech. And though I haven't unlocked this yet, I am clearly looking forward to the weapon my friend used to brag about, which is a rocket launcher that fires sharks. So,
goddamn right.
Yes, that's America, baby. That's American engineering right there. A gun that shoots sharks. I wants it. And if we don't want to dredge up the ocean of sharks, we'll just make mechanical sharks and then fire those.
We'll go the Austin Powers route and get sharks with freaking laser beams.
Yeah, but then the laser beam's doing the work. We want the shark to do the work.
I mean, laser's just for targeting. It's a laser-targeted show. What the hell are we talking about? Metal Wolf Chaos, anyway.
Laser sharks! So, as you're running around the map, you're trying to rescue these POWs and also beat the level. The one thing I hated about the POW thing, which you just get better with over time, is the whole about repeating stages, is that eventually, actually fairly early in the game, they introduce cages that have timers on them. And if you don't blow the cage up in a certain amount of time, the cage blows up and everyone inside dies. Man, this vice president's a piece of shit, isn't he? But what ends up happening here is that the timer kicks in when you enter the area that the cage is in. But there's no cue that the light that is activated except for the cage itself having a light on top that glows. seems reasonable, except for the fact that what if you don't know the cage is even there? What if you don't see it amidst all the chaos? Well, then you're just going to hear Jody tell you, oh, the POWs died. Like, I didn't know there were POWs. Why did you tell me there were POWs nearby? Maybe I would have looked for them. So what ends up happening is you're running around, you're taking care of business, and all of a sudden Jody tells you someone's dying. You're like, crap, I guess I'm coming back to this level later. Hoping you can find the cage the next time you're there. Otherwise, I'll just blow up again.
Oh,
but that's a small gripe. I will say one bigger gripe I had, though it's not a game breaker, but it is something worth pointing out because it was annoying, is that at least at the beginning of the game, later stages, I wasn't experiencing it. But actually, no. This is different variations throughout the game, so I'll just talk about it. On the intro scene, the sound seemed like it was kind of off. And what I mean by that is you'll hear an explosion maybe 3 seconds after, oh, not three, but say 2 seconds after the explosion happens on the screen, or dialogue. You can't tell if the dialogue's out of place because there's no one with moving mouths on the screen because they're all piloting mechs and stuff. But things like explosions and landing on the ground and things like that, you can definitely tell the sound is off when your guy is running, but you hear him landing, you know, stuff like that. That intro scene had me scared that this was going to be the entire game, but it was just the intro scene for that. But on a bigger note for someone like me, the music and sound and all that, which hopefully can be fixed with a patch if it's possible, the sound volumes are a bit off. So, for example, the music in this game is really good. It's very awesome. Rocking tunes for blowing up vice president lackeys. You know, great stuff. Problem is, if you're trying to figure out how to get the sound right so that the voices and the sound effects and the music all line up, you're going to probably be struggling with that. Right now, I'm playing the game where the sound effects are borderline non-hearable, and it's only at 60 compared to 100 on the sound bars, because the alternative was barely hearing the music in the game and just hearing explosions, despite having it at 80 for sound effects and 100 for max sound, or for max music. So, and also, every once in a while, like, the volume levels would shift, like, the character will talk and their pitch will go way up, and then it'll go down when the character hits the ground and starts the mission. Like, okay, these volume levels balanced out. This isn't right. So, again, it's an annoyance, but it makes me wonder if that was how it was on the original Xbox version, too. I never played it, so I can't compare it. I just know it exists in this one, so it's worth mentioning that. So,
yeah, it's been too long since I played the original to compare anything apples to apples, so I don't remember at all. It has been way too long.
It's sad, too, because honestly, that is the only thing that annoyed me, because the other things that could have been bizarre, like, you know, the occasional, like, truck that drives up, but it doesn't drive up. It just kind of appears and then drives up. So it's not like you can see it driving all the way up the street. It just pops up at a spot and then drives the rest of the way. Like, these are all things I attribute to early game,
early Xbox.
Just development. And I'm not going to hype about that. The game's still totally playable and it's still fun to play. But honestly, aside from the things I named there, I've had nothing but fun playing this game. And that speaks volumes to the fact that for being much of an audiophile as I am, I honestly, it didn't bother me enough to say I don't want to play this game anymore. I like playing this game. It is a lot of fun. You look forward to every one-liner that they throw at you. It's hysterical. And the levels themselves are not short either. Like, you'll get your gameplay money worth out of this game.
No,
like, levels, I mean, I've played levels that felt like they ran 30 minutes. Admittedly, that's also me destroying every object on the map to try to find collectibles or stuff like that. But nonetheless, levels taking me 30 minutes to do. And then I might go back later to save people. Now, I will say that the further in the game you get, the better the weapons you'll unlock, because you'll increase your development stats, which I should probably go loosely, just briefly talk about in a second. But as you do that, you'll get better weapons, and then those weapons will be stronger, so you'll blow up structures faster, you'll clear out enemies faster, which means you'll actually just ultimately beat levels faster. Nah. So repeat plays through levels will actually feel quicker, too. So it's not even a bad thing. But to touch on the statement I just made, you upgrade weapons in this game. You get new gear by way of earning money on stages. And at the end of a stage, when you go back to base, you spend that money on research on different types of weaponry. And when you pay the money to research a type of weapon, you may unlock a new firearm type or a new firearm under that category, which you can then purchase using rare metals and money to equip on your robot. So you'll be changing weaponry a fair bit in this game, getting new stuff that's more powerful, better stats, and just making yourself the best damn presidential robot you can be.
Nice. Well, I guess the only question left is $25 on it. What do you say?
Honestly, despite the stuff I was saying before, like the negative elements, I'd call this a solid buy. If you like mecha games at all, if you like absurdist humor at all, and you can appreciate some retro shit, this is on the money. And I'm honestly very glad that this has finally been relegated from the, you know, emulation hell world to be able to play it on a game machine officially without issue.
Hell yeah, I agree. The game is ridiculous. It's over the top. I think it's something that everybody needs to try at least once in their life because it is just so uniquely weird.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes I'll be blunt. Sometimes weird is all a game needs from me. Like, hey, this game, is it fun to play? Yes. I could play something else. Yeah, you could, but this game is fun to play. And you're the president piloting a mech against a walking White House.
And it's a better America than we have right now.
Pretty damn much. Or at least the president is. I'll take this guy any day of the damn week. He's freaking awesome.
Michael Wilson for president.
And then hopefully you beat the game and Jody becomes vice president because she deserves a promotion.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Kill la Kill If, or IF, however they want to say it. Developed by A+ and Arc System Works, published by Arc System Works and P-Cube. Released July 26th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. All the looks and feels of the original anime series remodeled with 3D cell look technology. Perform devastating combos, destroy your opponents, and relive the anime with your favorite scenes from the original series, revived with stunning visuals and cinematics. Pernell, tell us about Kill la Kill IF.
So Kill la Kill, it is actually if for sure, and I'll tell you why in a second. It's definitely if.
Okay, Kill la Kill if.
Because the idea behind the game, though, admittedly, as a person who watched the entire anime, I barely noticed it, but the premise is that you are playing the story via an alternate retelling where the initial antagonist, whose name is going to elude me because I suck at saying it. I was going to say Sayuki or Saitori, but that's just how bad it is. I'm bad at freaking Japanese names, but basically you control this. You see the story from her perspective instead of Ryoko's perspective, who was the original protagonist in the series.
Yeah, so it's an alternate. It's like a, if this happened.
Exactly. So the game itself is honestly a pretty little interesting game. It's not complicated, but it's got, I'll get into that in a second. Anyway, the gameplay consists of access to a story mode where you will initially play the game as the like I said, the alternate antagonist or alternate protagonist, where you'll see the gameplay play the story flow through her perspective, and that'll consist of elements from the stuff from the original anime, like cinema sequences, which are honestly animated. Nothing's like still, it's all animated, which is really nice for an anime fighter for once. But it'll pretty much be animated sequences followed by dialogue and eventual battles. You'll play through these items bit by bit. And after you beat her storyline, you'll eventually unlock Ryoko's storyline, and you'll play through her storyline. And then when you've done that, you'll have unlocked everything the game has available to unlock gameplay wise. Means there'll be a bunch of some characters you unlock and a couple of modes you'll unlock. Now, the gameplay of this is a sort of free flowing, like open space 3D battle environment. It means you can pretty much free run around, attack each other at will. Your attacks consist of a melee close-range attack, a long-range projectile attack, and a sort of break attack, which is supposed to allow you to smash through cover, like guards and stuff. It's a slow attack, but if it connects, boom, in your face. Now, every character in the game has some variation on these different things. So for example, yeah, they all have, you know, the physical melee attack, but Ryoko's melee attack will be different from, say, Gamagori's physical attack, or that freaking computer hacking guy's attack. God, their names are so weird. Anyway, they all perform differently. They all have very unique play styles, and their attacks, even though they all fall under different categories, function differently. So you'll be learning them each as you go. You can't just say, play as one character and then just play as the other guy and immediately know what you're doing, because you won't. So you'll be getting used to that. But as you use these characters, the idea is that you want, it's almost like a rock, paper, scissors or mix and match sort of battle system where, you know, break smash guards, dash, like, you know, close, like dash attacks can cancel out or not, not necessarily cancel out, but at least catch up to, you know, people. Hold on 1 second. This motherfucker here, I should go out there with a baseball bat. There's a guy checking car door to see if they're open.
Really?
Kid you not, right now. I know I locked my door, but it makes me want to go up there and smash his head open with a baseball bat. Like, what the hell you think you're doing? Yeah, I totally see him. And he's all casual about it, too. Like, yeah, look at me. Anyway, sorry about that. That totally distracted me. And if I were on the phone, I'd probably be in trouble right now. So I'm glad I'm doing these reviews instead. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Characters and types of attacks. It's like a mix and match thing where certain attacks are better against other attacks. So you'll break counters. You'll probably try to, like, if you got a guy who's really good at, you know, close the combat, you'll want to keep your distance, try to use long range stuff. But then that distance can be broken up by doing like a homing dash if you can pull it off at the right timing. And there's sidestepping and things of that nature too. So there's no like easy way to just mash a button to win. You have to actually mix and match. That is to say, if two people who just mash buttons are playing together, then yeah, I guess you're going to have that kind of party. But if you're playing with people who know what the hell they're doing or they played around with it a bit, you're going to have to do a little bit better at it in order technically to properly pull it off. So, honestly, the game itself is a lot of fun to me. And as a fan of the Kill la Kill series, I was very happy to see these guys finally get their due in a game to play around with. Like, my favorite character in the series is named like Nui, who's like a freaking creepy ass lolly girl with an umbrella who can clone herself, and she's like made of like fiber or whatever. She's a really weird character, but I was happy to see she was represented in the game, and they even kept her theme from the anime in that game. It was really nice. But yeah, suffice to say, I honestly found myself enjoying this game. The unfortunate thing, which I'll admit, is not that big of a deal once you get past it, is the fact that when I was originally playing the game, I booted it up at a friend's house. We were going to play versus mode. Like, let's just play around with it and see if we like the game or not. So I booted up, and you can't play versus mode until you get past the first chapter of the story mode. So, and it's not exactly short either, unless you skip all the cinemas. But let's be honest, if you're playing it for the first time, you're probably not going to want to skip it. You're going to want to see what the hell's going on. So we sat through the entire damn first chapter because I didn't want to skip it until so we could actually play versus mode. But after that, you pretty much are able to do versus together, and you unlock a few more modes as you play through the game, such as like covers and stuff like that. And I'll discuss that in a second. So battles can be a variety of different things. The most common type of battle in the game is 1v1, where you and an opponent are running all over the damn map, launching attacks, and also got to get into one other attack I'll describe in a little bit, because it just totally eluded me till now, launching attacks at each other. But there's also 2v1 battles, where sometimes it'll be you and another person against another opponent, or the other way around, where two opponents are battling you, and you have to deal with both of them at the exact same time. So it's an interesting little idea of how that game and how it works. Though, admittedly, when you get to these like scenarios where it's like 2v1 and you have more than one potential target, there's no like lock-on mechanic, at least that I noticed. So it gets to be a little hard to say, I want to fight that guy, not that guy, that guy. So you're like launching long-range attacks and you're going to the other guy, like, not that guy, go over there. So it's just something you'll have to get used to once you start playing the game a bit to know, okay, this is how the game determines, you know, who the opponent being targeted is. I'm focusing on that guy and you're fine. And there's another bit like mechanic in the game that exists called covers battle. So if you never watched the show, you're not going to understand what the hell I'm about to say. But in the anime, covers are clothing that wear humans, and they are powered by the humans that they consume. So you are basically fighting a ridiculous army of covers in this mode. So it's one person against usually an army of like maybe 10 of them on the screen at one time. And while they're not all that aggressive, it ends up becoming like a crazy button mashing melee brawl where you're just trying to kill them all as fast as you can. I never really found myself in a situation where I was trying to be strategic about killing them. I was just trying to beat them down as fast as I could while not losing my combo. But it's honestly an interesting little mechanic there. It feels more like an extra than like a, like, think of it as more like a seasoning to an actual like an actual scoop of ice cream or something. It wouldn't have made or break the game for me. It's just there and I'm okay with it. But those are pretty much the primary modes in the game. There is, of course, a training mode, and there's a versus mode, and there's an online mode too, which I didn't bother with because I'm bad enough at the game on my own time. I'm not going to go on online to see how badly the internet can beat me too. I will say that the game's roster is very small. So there are 8 characters by default. I want to say, yeah, 8 characters. You unlock 2. Actually, you unlock more than 2. Ultimately, you'll have about 12 characters. You have the base guys. You get the 2 dual-wielding variants. You get the mom. You get Noi. And then you get the 2 DLC characters that will be free DLC later on in the year. And that gets you to about 12 characters, which, as you can probably guess, is fairly paltry for a typical fighting game.
Yeah.
Though, with that said, it's based on the anime. There aren't that many fighters in the show. I think they pretty much covered the majority of the bases. There's like 1 or 2 other like lower tier fighting characters in the show that aren't in the video game. But I'll live. So there's that. But I will say that each of the characters do play fairly differently enough that people will find their niche, their character or characters that suit their play style, and they will utilize them in versus mode against other players. So, yeah, low player roster, but at least the characters feel different enough in execution that you feel like you're getting 12 diverse characters instead of 12, they're kind of different characters.
Yeah.
So, but the thing I need to mention, because I almost forgot about it, is there's a thing called Bloody Valor in the game. It's actually a pretty important mechanic in the game. So the way it works is, as you're running around and you're beating the opponent up, you're boosting your special gauge, just like a typical fighting game would have you do. But once you hit a certain point on your SP bar, you can hit the 2 trigger buttons to activate Bloody Valor. What Bloody Valor is, as long as you connect it with your opponent, it ends up being like a sort of rock, paper, scissors like mode, where for that split second, you were trying to choose an attack button to determine the outcome of what you want to do. And each of those buttons performs a different thing. Like one might give you more SP, one might give you increased attack power, one might give you like a higher bit of speed or increased attack on one of your moves, whatever. And the opponent is trying to guess what you're going to do. Almost like a mind game bit. And depending on what they choose, you may or may not get your bonus. You may or may not get a Valor level up, which I'll talk about second. And you may or may not get the thing that you were pursuing in the first place, your bonus. Now, if you do pull it off, you'll get a Valor bonus. And what Valor bonuses do for each character is different. It's 3 different tiers, and each one gives you like a different perk. Like one might say your long range attack gets a power increase or something like that. You know, things like that. So what ends up happening is eventually, if you can pull it off 3 times in a row, you'll go into sort of like a ultimate mode, which I believe increases your attack power a little bit, but also allows you access to your ultimate kill move. And if you pull that off, well, as the name says, you kill the guy and it's over. So kind of like how another Arc System Works favorite, BlazBlue, does it. They have ultimate kill moves in that game too. So similar style. So you're going to have people trying to manipulate when and how they want to use their Bloody Valor, or they may just ignore the Bloody Valor altogether and just say, I'm going to fight you. Screw this mechanic. But it does exist to be utilized as needed. So suffice to say, it's funny how you think about it. The gameplay seems like it's limited because they don't tell you about there being a ton of stuff you can do. But it's one of those games where it's all about taking what they offer, mastering it, and then figuring out how to utilize it against another person. Almost like how like Smash Brother character moves or Smash Brother moves rosters can feel limited depending on who you're using, and they're not complicated to input, but it's all about how to use the moves the characters have to the best of your ability to do, you know, crazy maneuvers and pull off some awesome wins.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this game is putting you in an interesting position as far as like the whole usual recommended scenario, because it's a full price game, and I'm not going to sit here and talk about, you know, it's worth it to me, it's worth it to you. Everyone determines their own value for spending. But I will say the character roster is not a lot. And if you have not watched Kill La Kill, while the game still can be fun, it won't resonate with you as much as it would to a person who watched the show. Because, again, the if kind of kicks off well into the original anime. And there's a bunch of stuff that's going on. Like, what the clothes wearing people? What the hell are you talking about? Why are these people naked? I don't know. Who is that girl with a parasol? What is she there for? Where's a couture? Why are they speaking French? And so on and so on and so on. So
there are things like this is something mainly for fans.
I would have to say so. This is a fan game made by the studio or made with the assistance of the studio for the fans specifically. If you're not a fan of Kill la Kill, I'd almost say ignored unless you watch the anime, which, by the way, you should watch the damn anime because it's very good. But watch the anime, and then if you really feel you get that charge up from that anime watch and you really liked it, then get in on this game because it's cool to see your favorite characters throw down in a system that honestly flows very well. I think it's enjoyable.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Hopefully you don't get robbed.
Oh, I hope I don't either because I'm considering putting some pants on and get a bat and go find this guy.
Who? Putting pants on?
You know what? Screw the pants. It's another thing to identify me by. You know, no, just get the bat. Just get the bat. But no, I'm not going to go up there. I'm not going to pull some vigilante shit. But yeah, that was weird. Man, that was
vigilante shit.
Yeah. I tell myself, I was like, I almost, you ever have a day where you just kind of wish you had it in you to do that though? Like, you just hear about some stuff. You're like, why is that happening? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? I'm tired of this crap. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to put some pants on and a shirt and I'm going to go outside. The rest will just happen.
Beat somehow. That motherfucker down.
Exactly. I didn't want to say that part, but yes, beat the shit out of that guy. Why are you hitting me? Why are you touching my car?
I just wanted CDs.
Well, I don't play CDs. I use an MP3 player. Time to break some knees. Anyway, it's just, oh my God, people suck sometimes. And I seriously kind of want to go up there and look for this dude too. Though I probably should at least call somebody and say, yeah, there's a guy checking cars around here.
It never hurts to call the cops and let them know that there's a suspicious character walking around.
Ain't that the truth?
We are going to move on. Purnell, always good having you on. Do you have any final words before we do move on?
I hope I'm on the show next week, because if I'm not, that means I got a little too justicey.
All right, next game to talk about is called Smoot Summer Games, developed by Kaneda Games, published by Jandu Soft, released July 25th on the Switch and PS4, August 8th on the Xbox One for $9.99. Get the gold medal, get ready for summer games, play athletic events from your sofa. Prepare for the next season. Smoot Summer Games is a sports arcade game for 1 to 4 players where you can play 18 athletic events. Checking this one out. Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm good. Me and the dogs are all here ready to review.
Yeah, I heard a bark in the background.
Yeah, brace for impact. We have neighbors that are like cutting the grass or something. So, yeah, you'll hear all about it.
Sweet.
Yep.
So how is Smoot Summer Games?
It's okay. Yeah. No, you know, let me go ahead and give a little detail. So Smoot Summer Games is kind of the, you know, track and field, javelin, discus, type menagerie of decathlon events and stuff. And it really would look not at all out of place on like the Wii Classic. You know, and I mean that in both good and bad ways. So it's got these cute little, you know, kind of Mii style avatars, and some of them are pretty obvious references to certain celebrities and other folks. I like the Mr. T especially. You know, and it's very cute and cutesy and whimsical and, you know, family friendly, kid friendly, all that stuff. So, you know, it really reminds me of a lot of the older like Wii Sports type games in that sense. Yeah. And given the right control apparatus, I think it would probably play very well on the Wii too, but we're playing on an Xbox. So, you know, you're focusing on, button presses or combinations of buttons at the right time, to win these events rather than, you know, waving a wand around. Graphically though, it does also feel a little dated. Like some of the textures just look real blurry, and the shadows that some of the little avatars cast occasionally, they look a little bit blurry, a little foggy. So you know, it almost looks like I'm picking up a Wii title that just got released on the Xbox One as like a port or something.
And
that's not necessarily a terrible thing. It just, it definitely doesn't have the sort of polish that, you know, you might expect for a console that can do 4K.
True.
Graphics aren't everything. I mean, I spend a good half my time playing retro games. I prefer those more often than AAA titles. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But yeah, the game itself, you know, if I want to get down to gameplay and such, it's more of a... it depends on the game as to just how much fun you're going to have, in my view. There are some simple ones that are just straight up button mashing, like the 100-yard dash. I think that if you can achieve a certain rhythm with the A button, you might do better. But it, to me, it just seems like just mindless button mashing. Just hit it as fast as you can. To be fair, they add just an element of challenge. It's possible to fault on some of the games if you start too soon or you end too late. So there is an element of challenge there that makes it a little more than just mindless button mashing. But let's be fair, it's really pretty simple. So some of the games. Yeah, the dogs agree. They're chiming in. some of the games, like the Discus, it gets a little more complicated. So, you know, you might be alternating two different buttons at a certain pace. That's a little more challenging, I suppose, and getting the right rhythm. Then it'll lock your speed, and then you have to hold down another button to try to hit the right angle. I can see that there's a little more skill to that, and I got a little discombobulated a couple times and threw the Discus almost straight up into the air. It didn't work very well. So...
but proud, you know, you.
Don't quit the day job. There's three chances generally when you play these games to try to get the best score of the three, which is awesome, you know, how it should be. So it's not one and done. Ah, crap. Let me, you know, start the whole thing again with everybody.
Yeah.
And you do championships where you stack in different events and then you get a running tally of who has the highest score and then you get your podium 1, 2, and 3. You know, it's a very by the numbers, very basic game. And each of the events has sort of a smaller mini game to it because they all play a little differently, but they all follow a very similar boilerplate, you know, do these button combinations, try to match this thing right here and boom, you know, and it's over in 10 seconds or so, on a per player basis. And
that's
so
what she said.
Yeah. You got me.
Yeah.
giggity. It's not a complicated game. You know, it's really a very simple game. And to that end, it's also a good kid-friendly type game. I don't feel like it was really, you know, captivating. It was really enrapturing. And I suppose that's not really the target here. That's not what it's trying to do. So, I give it a generally positive review. I feel like there are a lot of things they do right. It's just there are just these many things that aren't that exciting about it. So, you know, my feeling on it is, you know, generally positive, a little lukewarm maybe.
All right. You said it's good for kids. Did your kids give it a go?
Yeah. Yeah. They liked it, but then they went back to playing Fortnite.
Oh God.
Yeah,
as yeah. Kids are wont to do.
Exactly. And that's kind of the thing is I think you know, maybe that's the element this is missing, is just you know, more of that interactivity with others, you know, pick up games and anonymous stuff, maybe. I don't know. More zombies.
Maybe.
Yeah. It varies. You know, they still enjoyed playing like Wii Sports Resort and stuff. So, you know, it's just there's only so much time they invest in each of those types of games. And then they usually go back to something where everything is new each time you play it. And that's not what you get here. It's a more consistent experience.
Yeah.
So take that.
Well, I enjoyed the Smoots tennis game, so I'll probably check this one out myself. But for $9.99, what is your official verdict?
Yeah, $9.99. I think it's a try it, and I would lean more towards buy it if you've got little ones that want to kind of get in on the gameplay as well. So, you know, I like couch games. This one has more of a hot seat feel. Sometimes it's more like you take turns than necessarily all go at once. But I think if you have kids. You want to play together. I think it's more toward a buy it than a try it. And if you don't meet that demographic, you may not necessarily feel so strongly about it.
Sounds good. All right. Well, Royal, always a pleasure having you on here chatting. Good to have the dogs on chatting as well. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Ding.
All right, next game to talk about is called Super Wylo D-Make, developed by Light Up, published by Rattlake Games, released July 30th on Xbox One and PS4, August 2nd on the Switch for $4.99. Wylo and Agatha need to rescue their dog from the clutches of Dr. Etvaldo. Roll, fly, jump, and shoot your way across a variety of different platforming levels using unique power-ups to reach the end of the level. Can you defeat all five bosses and rescue your buddy? Checking this one out. Jacob Garner, did you rescue your buddy?
I have not rescued my buddy just yet.
But you're working on it.
Well, yeah, I'm working on it. I mean, no. I mean, like...
So it's a rescue in progress.
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. It matters how much of a dick he's being.
Nah.
I might just leave him there.
Stupid dog.
Well, it's a pupper, so no, I couldn't just leave a pupper there. I mean, after all, I've got my dog.
You are human.
Well, yeah, I'm not cruel. I mean, like, hell, I've got my dog on the bed with me right now.
Aww.
Yeah, he's a Shih Tzu Beagle mix named Angus.
Yeah, you said
Shih Tzu. That's the name of the type of dog.
The word shit's in there.
Sim-zoo. I mean... Anyway,
how is Super Wylo D-Make?
Well, man, we're not even gonna, like, you don't even go in there with, like, the, hey, how you doing? What have you been up to?
Okay, fine, how are you?
Fuck you, Joe.
Oh, Jesus.
I honestly, today's been pretty crappy. How about you, Joe?
I'm stuck talking to you, so that's all that needs to be said.
Wow, so we're both having crappy days.
Pretty much. Right.
Yeah. And you know what I like before, all right, so for the viewers listening at home or wherever wherever you listen to this podcast, like, usually Joe and I, like, will shoot the shit for like 10-15 minutes before we start recording. And yeah, we didn't this time that much. Like, we only talked for like a minute before he hit record. And I totally forgot to, like, I had a subject I wanted to talk about with Joe beforehand, and what it was is I actually wanted to discuss, like, hey, we should come up with something for me to discuss at the end of the thing, so I actually have something to discuss. And because we didn't have that discussion, I'm going to ruin it again.
See, the thing is, you always look for a discussion when I ask for your final words, but it's not supposed to be a discussion. It's supposed to just be something quick. Well, it could be a discussion. What?
Come on. Is there anything I'm quick about?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Okay, nothing. One thing.
All right. I mean, they don't need to know about, you know, my polishing the bishop habits, all right?
Oh, so. Jesus.
Flogging the dolphin.
So anyway, how is Super Wylo D-Make? You're not going to let me get to this review, are you?
Yeah, I'll let you get to it. All right, so
it's called Adrian Super from Rattlake is going to listen to this and be like, why the fuck do I keep sending them games?
Honestly, they've been sending us games for like, how long have they been? Pretty much the entire podcast, right?
Pretty much for the entire run that Rattlake has been putting out games, I think we've covered pretty much all of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, they know what kind of quote unquote quality content to expect from this podcast. I mean, I don't think they're going to stop at this point. I don't see them being like, ah, fuck it, Jacob. That is the last straw.
I've had it with them. I do appreciate that we are now almost 5 minutes into this review and nothing has been said about the game.
You gave the introduction to it, so we did talk about the plot of the game. And I think I said the name of it once. So, anyway, Super Wylo D-Make. it's an interesting little indie title. So pretty much it is very much Super Mario Brothers esque, like in terms of it being like a platformer and retro kind of feel to it. And yeah, so you're going through all the levels, you're collecting coins, you're stomping on your enemies' heads, but then you also do get all these different power-ups, like a frog, a bee costume, which I thought was pretty cute.
There's bee like costume a is so OP. It is so OP. Overpowered.
Oh, well, I was also playing on easy mode, so, I mean, it's even more overpowered than that. Because, I mean, like, easy mode, thank God, is, like, infinite flight, infinite lives, I think, and one other thing that separates it from normal mode. I forget. Anyway, who cares? So, yeah, so frog, bee, and I think it's a raccoon. I
want to say there's two other ones. I don't remember. I used the bee suit almost exclusively in this game, so
I had a lot of fun. There's also the thing that shoots needles. I don't even remember what animal it was supposed to be, but who cares? All right, so you change into these different suits. Each one of them has different powers. Like the frog can help you swim better. The bee helps you fly. The raccoon, tanuki, whatever they like, it kind of acts like Sonic the Hedgehog in a way. And then they have this little thing that like shoots quills, or I don't know what he shoots. Nipples. I don't know.
Maybe
it could be. I mean, I don't know of any animal that fires nipples, but you know, hey, I mean, they can make whatever they want. It's their own game. So anyway,
now I found them all. There's the unicorn, which is the one that shoots needles. That's,
yeah.
And the armadillo lets you roll up into a ball and charge attack.
Oh, I thought that was a raccoon.
Nope, armadillo.
Oh, my bad. The game doesn't exactly explain itself particularly well. I mean, when Joe was giving like the plot of the game, I was just like, oh, huh. I
didn't realize. There's a plot. I'll be damned.
Well, no, I mean, like, there is a plot, but the thing is that, like, I had no idea about the, like, the names of the characters. I was just like, oh. So, I didn't realize that, like, the dog and, like, the girl were given names. That's cool. So, yeah, it, like, the game does not explain itself particularly well, but then again, it also doesn't have to, because you've played similar games, so you know what you're getting into, you know the gameplay style. And honestly, it is super relaxing. Like this, like the games that you've had me review. The other one was Radalika too, as well, wasn't it?
I think so.
It was. Oh crap! I forget what it was.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. I know. I don't know. It was another indie title, I think, from Radalika. But yeah, it's just like two for two on relaxing games that like. And not a lot of thought has to get put into. Oh, no, I reviewed Hoggy. That wasn't Radalika, was it?
Yeah, it was. Hoggy 2. Oh,
okay, well then, cool. Which also, kids, you should go buy that one as well. Spoiler alert, I really enjoyed this game. So, I don't know how that's really a spoiler.
I don't know either.
Because, I mean, I think I've made it pretty clear that I enjoy this game up till this point. But anyway, so yeah, it's just you move through the levels, you go through different environments, you stomp on enemies' heads, or you don't, however you want to play it. You can gather coins. Each level has three large coins or mega coins. I never really figured out what they do. Collectibles. I don't know. Okay, so it's just
for and they open bonus reasons. Stages.
That's right, they do because I got an achievement about that.
Yeah,
yeah. So also, if you're an achievement whore like myself and Joe, there's tons of easy achievements in this. Like pretty much, I think it's just in the first level alone, you end up unlocking like 150 achievement points. So that's
something cool. Ridiculous. I know that.
Well, yeah, because it's just like, oh. Like, you collected 100 coins, you got the unicorn suit, you got the frog suit, you got the bee suit, you got the armadillo suit, you know, like, like, and all that's done literally in the first level. So cool. So yeah, it's just, you're pretty much playing like a Super Mario game, and it's a ton of fun. The graphics are pretty. The music was cute. I did find how, like, when you stomp on an enemy, like, the enemy, like, comes towards the screen. Like, I found it, amusing at first, but then, like, as it kept going, I kind of found it to be a little disorienting. I don't know. I didn't think it needed to happen with every single, you know, enemy that you stomp on. Maybe if it had been like, oh, well, when you do certain attacks, it does that every once in a while. But I don't know. Honestly, like, the enemies flying at you, was really the only complaint I had about the game.
My only real complaint about the game is the music is good. I enjoy the music, but the mixing is off. Everything sounds way too loud, and it sounds like it's clipping and distorted. And I think they just need to either put a volume slider in there or go in there and just lower the volume of stuff because it is way too loud.
I didn't have any issue with it.
You didn't hear it clipping or anything?
Mm-mm. No. But then again, also keep in mind, you have a fancier setup than me.
Well, no, I was playing in my room that's literally just the TV speakers. And it sounded like it was going to blow the speakers just because of loud it was.
But Joe, what kind of TV do you have in your bedroom or room or whatever? You know,
flat screen.
Yeah, I know, but also like yours is still a shitload fancier than mine. So I mean, like, I don't know. I think I have like a fairly normal. I don't know. My TV is not nearly as or my setup is not nearly as like high tech as yours. So I think for like cheaper TVs, you're probably not going to hear it.
Maybe,
in my opinion. And perhaps that's what it got tested on too.
It's, you know, possible
for the developers. But yeah, I didn't hear any clipping or anything like that. Hmm. So.
Well, maybe it's just my old man ears, but I know I sent an email to Radaleka about it and didn't hear back. So hopefully they're aware of it, because it was definitely noticeable for me. It just, everything sounded just too loud and garbled.
Did you try like deleting it and re-downloading?
I don't know. Still a fun game though. Still an easy completion. You could probably complete it in under an hour or two if you're good at platformers. It's not going to be a 20-minute completion like some Radaleka titles, but this one's still an easy one, and it's a fun one, and as is par of the course for Radaleka games, you only got to beat the second-level boss to complete the game.
Yeah, which is pretty handy.
Yeah, instead of all five. I like this about Radaleka. They want you to come in, complete the game, and move on because they got a new one coming out next week.
Yeah. So, what else are you going to spend your $5 on? Boom. Next game. Also, at the same time, this is a good game for kids as well. Especially since, you know, obviously you're not going to be playing Mario on Xbox. I'd say that this is actually the next best thing. And it's fairly, I mean, if you don't count bopping, you know, enemies on the head, or stomping on their heads, which, when you say that out loud, it sounds far more violent than it actually is. But, I mean, this is a good game to hand kids. Like, I definitely would have no qualms with my son playing this. So.
Nice. Well, overall, $5 on this one. What is your verdict?
Hell yeah.
All right. I agree with you. $5. Good price. Definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, once again, they knocked it out of the park.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. I'm going to ask you for final words, and you're going to have some kind of discussion for me, and I'm going to have to look for an awkward place to edit it. So let's just get this over with.
Everybody, if you haven't already, DuckTales Remastered is getting delisted on the 8th of August, 2019. You know, for all you people who are obviously going to listen, you know, to previous episodes, because people do that.
No, they don't.
So, I was being facetious, you dick. Anyway, so it's getting delisted on the 8th. Right now it's like $3.74 on Xbox. So get it before it gets delisted. So chop chop.
All right, and finally we're bringing in our good friend Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right, Joe.
How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. As usual, I don't remember much of it, so it must have been pretty good.
Too much Skyrim?
Yeah, I definitely played a lot of Skyrim. We're still going strong on the stream there, so...
I don't know if I've ever met anyone who played as much Skyrim as you do. It is insane.
Yeah, I've been actually following some other Twitch channels who specialize in Skyrim, and apparently I am on the high end of total playtime. We calculated, or I calculated it recently, and it's around 1,162 hours now.
Jesus!
Yeah, I've already streamed 162 of those hours.
Damn, dude, that is crazy. 1,100 hours.
Yeah, it's a good game.
All right, I gotta pull up my phone. I gotta... 1,100.
Oh, we're going to figure out how many
you said,
days.
What, 1,164 you said?
62.
1,162 divided by 24. So 48 days.
48 days of Skyrim. That makes sense.
A month and a half straight of Skyrim.
I mean, can you remember what you did in January?
No, but you can. You were playing Skyrim.
Exactly. I got it on file, yo.
How many characters do you have now?
Currently streaming my fourth character, and on the Switch it's hard to tell, because I've had to delete a few of them to make space. I want to say it was like between 15 and 20. Damn, maybe more than 20. But yeah, I'm on character 4 on the stream right now. We're a Fists of Justice pugilist run. Nice. Only allowed to punch evil to death. We're not allowed to sneak, and we're not allowed to steal. So
no sneaking.
Everything's gonna be a punch in the face or a pile driver to the face. And you saw some of that stream. You can see that they actually put in like wrestling moves.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And then after that, I'm either going to do a no weapon assassin run. Everything's going to be poison in the pockets.
Oh.
Because that's a thing that they let you do. So, an assassin who can't use any weapons whatsoever can in no way actually directly fight anything. And apart from that which is necessary for the build, yeah, I have to figure it out. And then the other is a fork and knife character, because it's secretly, I suppose, the weakest weapon in Skyrim is a special set of a fork and knife that you can actually wield in combat. The fork does 1 damage and the knife does 2 damage.
Oh my god.
So making a viable character that can only use a fork and knife. That's one I'm real excited about too.
I didn't even know you could wield a fork and knife in the game.
You can't wield just any fork and knife.
Yeah, it has special to be one.
They're special and they're quite hidden. There's 3 sets that I know of in the game, and only one of them is available from the beginning, and it's in a vampire den, so
oh, God.
Even just getting the weapon, you have to run like the Dickens. Oh, and the fork and knife build is also going to be naked, because why not?
Yeah, really, why not? I mean,
yeah. Gonna beat the
you're
game.
Making it hard, why not make it that much harder?
I play all these on the hardest difficulty, too, which is my favorite part.
Which is insane.
I don't know. It makes it fun. I mean, I've been playing this game a while now, so I know my way around it.
Yeah.
So gotta do something. Make it harder. So that's what's going on the streams right now. And anybody that's interested in that, I stream Monday through Sunday every night, and 8 p.m. Central to midnight or so. And it's a Liar Exaggerate, like the Earthbound character.
Which is a good character.
Oh, yeah. He's always been, like, one of my favorites.
him a favorite for you?
So, I like that he's one of the first people you talk to. And, of course, he has some good jokes right off the bat, talking about how he's very strong because he works out and eats garlic. And, you know, he just has this real high opinion of himself. He he believes himself to be very important. And indeed, he does dig up the Mani Mani statue, which is what kind of kicks the game off. But yeah, he just has this strangeness to him that I appreciate. And I like that he's got a thing that he says. You have to actually travel all the way back to Wynette as soon as you get Paula, but before you get Jeff. And I think it's before you get Jeff. And anyway, he says, I haven't been able to find the treasure, but when I do a job, I do it well. I'm a man's man. One day you may make fun of me, but one day you'll see. When the game is over, I may be a hero. And when the game is over, I may be a hero. That's a line that I like.
That is a good line.
Yeah, so that's why I adopted that back in the like Live Journal and Zanga days. So,
oh God.
Yeah, so you know.
I remember Live Journal.
Uh huh. Don't go looking for my journal because it's all gone.
I wonder if mine is there.
Oh, who knows?
I don't know. But speaking of heroes, should we get to the games?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I guess we should talk about games that aren't Earthbound in Skyrim.
You got two to talk about this week. The first one is called Chroma Squad, developed by Behold Studio, published by Plug-In Digital, released August 1st on the Switch for $14.99. Chroma Squad is a tactical RPG about five stunt actors who decide to quit their jobs and start their own Power Rangers-inspired TV show. Cast actors purchase equipment and upgrades for the studio, craft weapons and giant mechas out of cardboard and duct tape. Chris, tell us about Chroma Squad.
All right, Chroma Squad. Well, first off, you may recognize, I don't know if you'll recognize, but the indie developer who made this game was Behold Games, right?
Behold Studio.
Behold Studio, yeah, I knew there was another word. But Behold Studio, they are a Brazilian developer, which, you know, shout outs to Brazil, man. They've been making the best indie games lately. I mean, Blazing Chrome is you know, from Joy Masher, which is Brazilian. And, you know, I talked about 99 Vitas before. That was a Brazilian game. But this is from Behold Studio, who is responsible for the Knights of Pen and Paper and Galaxy of Pen and Paper games. So I've actually covered them before. Yeah. And
I didn't know they were the same studio.
Yeah, I looked them up. I did my research today, Joe.
Look at you. I'm so proud of you.
Look at me. But, I mean, I did it because I was like, there's something about this style and this text that's way too tiny that I recognize. And so I looked it up and I was like, oh, okay, this makes perfect sense then. Because, yeah, they're the ones who, and, you know, the way that the game plays out is very reminiscent of, like, Knights of Pen and Paper and such. So, yeah, Chroma Squad is, of course, a, you know, like with the other games, it's a love letter to a nostalgic thing that all of us 30-somethings have for the, you know, Super Sentai, you know, Power Rangers. And, well, you know, if you want to extend it further in U.S. television, the Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad. And what was it? Teenage Alien Fighters from Beverly Hills?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I don't know that one.
That was a cable one, so I didn't get to watch it much beyond the pilot. It might not have even survived beyond the pilot. But yeah, you know, just a bunch of kids that turn into spandex superheroes and fight, you know, monsters, and then they do the kaiju special effects too by, you know, making everything gigantic. Everybody gets in the big Zord. This game definitely pays homage directly to the Power Rangers. In fact, the very title screen says inspired by Saban's Power Rangers. So they're making no apologies here.
If I remember, that might be a legal requirement that they have it stated inspired by.
Yeah, totally. But I'm just saying that they're definitely drawing their aesthetic from one particular series, and they aren't trying to say anywhere that it's like, oh, this is our take on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you start the game and it's a bunch of stunt people who aren't the actual actors on the show. They're just the uncelebrated people in the spandex suits. Cause, you know, even as kids, we knew, just cause they looked different, like their bodies were different. The characters who were in the spandex were not the kids that you saw walking around the high school, you know, in their mid-20s.
Yeah.
I think Bulk and Skull ended up being in every series of Power Rangers, and they're like in their 40s now. I'm pretty sure that happened. Don't quote me on that, but
I wouldn't be shocked at this point.
I'm very interested in knowing why this is, how this is explained away. Anyways, that'd be like you and me showing up at a high school.
Hey, being fellow like, children.
Hello, fellow children. We're the school bullies. I guess they could make the joke about never graduating. But anyways, okay, so they these are the uncelebrated stunt people who are, you know, fighting in front of the green screen. And it actually, their last filming session serves as your tutorial battle where a director's yelling at you to do different things that you have to do in the show. And so then you get to learn how to actually do the fights. And then after that, of course, the stunt men get mad. I say men, but the stunt people get mad and leave. And then they decide to start their own studio where they're going to make their own show. So they go from being the quote unquote Super Rangers to being the Chroma Squad. And so, yeah, like the cool thing about that is that at that point, since they're reinventing themselves, you get to pick your actors and the colors of their costumes and the character's name. So like, you know, you can have the classic red, yellow, pink, blue, and black, which I went ahead and went with. You can also like choose grays and like some other secondary colors, purples, and, you know, turquoise. Of course, can you?
I don't know. I doubt it.
I was going to say, I didn't see it, but I could be wrong. And yeah, like you basically, you basically create that, and each like different actor has a different thing that they bring. Like they bring different stats to the actual battle, and also where you place them. So you have a lead character, an assault character, a scout, a techie, and an assist. And that actually, you know, that kind of determines what you're going to be able to do in battles. And so, of course, the battles play out on a grid, just like a, you know, a typical tactics RPG, like, you know, we talked about God Wars and Legna Tactics and, you know, going back to like Final Fantasy Tactics and Hoshigami, like things like that. It's going to be seem very familiar to fans of that genre. You walk up beside the enemy, you choose to attack them, and then you attack them. You can choose different special moves that are character-based that you can then do at them. And as you progress through the game, you can unlock or purchase more skills that are much more elaborate, because you're making a show. It's not there so far, at least, there haven't been any actual real fights. They're just trying to be entertaining. And so you end up with like these giant spectacular attacks that, you know, kill the enemy, quote unquote, but they're just, you know, other actors. And, you know, but it kind of, you know, again, because this is like Knights of Pen and Paper, it sort of blurs that line between what's really going on in the world and like what's going on in the game. So like, you know, you see enemies explode and they don't come back, but they're just like, well, we just filmed a show, you know. It's like it kind of makes the special effects seem like they're happening in the studio in front of the green screen, you know? And of course, because the actors wanted to get away from the green screen, you actually do get to do certain episodes in, like, you know, different locations. And of course, there are giant Mechazord battles. Those play out a little bit differently, and they're not like every battle or anything like that. So that's another thing. You do get to fight with giant robots in this game.
Nice.
Yeah, and what I really, really like in the battle system specifically is that instead of walking over to an enemy and then pushing, like, you know, attacking them or, like, just sitting there and defending or something like that, you can do an assist, which is to say you can push the X button to have your character in, like, a kind of assist mode, and then if you target that character with a second character, they can then go over there and get, like, boosted over to a further along area, like, you know, like getting catapulted by the one character and, you know, they'll do, like, a stunt or something like that. So you can actually create those elaborate, like, Power Ranger-style stunts.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and you can do what's called a finishing move, which is where four of the characters surround a boss character and use their assist like mode, and then the last character goes up and attacks, and they all five do a special shared attack. And in fact, you know, like in Final Fantasy Tactics A, like, or what, Advance, I guess, in yeah. A2, they have specific like goals that you can go for within the battle. So it might be like keep everyone's health above 50%, and then like make sure to use a finishing move on the boss. And you know, when it, if you meet those requirements, then you get the ultimate reward in the game, which is to say you get new audience. You make new fans. The better you do, the more fans you have. And that, you know, of course, allows you to do other things and unlock other things. The sheer amount of stuff that you can then use to customize your characters. There's a shop where you can buy new props, which is to say, like, new boots, new gloves, and all that stuff. And the flavor text always, like, makes them out to be, like, where they're made of cardboard and duct tape, essentially. So they're not actually powerful. They're just impressive. And, you know, like, you can also get items from the battles, quote-unquote, that you can then use to craft new items. So there's a crafting section, too, which actually I rarely see that in tactical games. Yeah, there's just, like, there's skills, skill trees, like, all these kind of things you can unlock. And again, like I said, your characters are all custom. I'll share the stupid names that I gave my characters here in a minute.
Nice.
But yeah, ultimately, the goal of the game is, yeah, you just get through these battles. Each one is an episode, quote unquote, and then you do enough episodes to end a season, and then you do a season finale, and then, you know, you're on to the next part of the story. So I was extremely impressed with how well the ethos of like Power Rangers, or the meta ethos, I suppose, of filming Power Rangers, like translates super well to like this particular genre of like RPG. Like, you'd think it would be an action game, but it's not.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, that's about all there is to say about it. I mean, it's just really well made. The graphics look great. It's that 8-bit, really detailed, animated style. Like, the enemy design's really good. Like, I really, really quite like the graphics in this game. The only thing I guess I could say against it is the text is a little small in portable mode. I was really squinting at the screen. But when I put it on my TV, it was fine. But it does have tiny, tiny text. And, that might bother some people. The other weird thing, and you know, this just got saved from being a complaint, because when I started up the game, it looked like it had that rounded off look in the scan lines, and like text had shadows and stuff on it, and I was like, no, it's gonna be one of those, and I looked for the option to turn it off, and it wasn't there. But then I started the game itself, and it all went right back to like being flat and, you know, HD and clear and, you know, like a regular video game. So it's just sometimes on the load screens, they'll have like a retro mode that I guess they just use for effect. But thankfully, it's not in the gameplay. So they get a pass for that.
Nice. Well, overall, $15 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, $15. Absolutely. Go get it. This is great for any fan of tactics RPGs. This is one of the few tactics RPGs that's actually really funny. The humor in the game, like, it does everything from, like, it makes Backstreet Boys references to, like, other little 90s things, and, like, the flavor text is good. You get lots and lots of letters that you can name your character with, so you can call them, let's say, Ron Selfie Stick. I named my assault guy Alan Demise, named my scout Ted Canary. I named my assist the pretty blonde lady who I picked because she gets bonus audience points for being pretty. Her name is Alberta Special Sauce. And then the techie character, I just got a robot, and I named him Dr. Gas Control.
Dr. Gas Control.
I just liked it.
Oh, my Lord. I love your names, Chris.
Thank you. Yeah, go get this one. It's really interesting. If you found Knights of Pen and Paper to be a little slow, then this will be a good antidote for that, because it's more fast-paced and direct. It's much more of an RPG. So, and anybody who enjoyed the Power Rangers back in the day, I mean, you're going to find plenty to love in this game, so go for it.
Awesome, sounds good. One final game to talk about tonight is called Woodle Tree 2 Deluxe, developed and published by Chubby Pixel, released July 25th on the Switch for $12.99. This time, a new menace is taking over the woodlands with a black substance that is absorbing life and energy from all living creatures. Will you be skilled enough to help Woodle in his quest to repel this enormous new evil force? Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, Woodle Tree 2. So, of course, I had to look this up because there's no Woodle Tree 1 on the Switch.
Yes, there is.
There is?
Yep.
Well, I didn't find it.
Woodle Tree Adventures.
Okay. I'll look again. All right, yeah, because I looked it up and I was like, oh, so it's another sequel that went right. Well, okay, I'm corrected immediately. but this is the sequel to that game, and it stars the son of Woodle, apparently, is what they say on the website and everything like that. And interestingly, this is actually kind of a remake of the sequel that originally appeared on Steam for like $4. But I was reading about it, and the guy said that basically it just was, there were a lot of features that he wasn't able to implement, so he just released the game as a kind of basic version. And once that sold enough, then he was able to fund and I think it also got Kickstarted, I'm not too sure. Oh, by the way, the last game was Kickstarted too, and they refer to Kickstarter in a couple of things. But yeah, like, he was able to actually implement, like, a much larger world map and new characters, new story, new moves, all this other kind of stuff. So the deluxe version really is deluxe. If you happened to cross Woodle Tree 2 prior to this release, then, yeah, this is going to be a much different game. But yeah, so, you know, the story doesn't really matter because you don't actually... They barely refer to anything like that. Like, I honestly forgot that it was any kind of sequel until I was reading about it later. And, you know, of course, the two is a giveaway. But yeah, you start off as an adorable little tree stump. That's the character of the game, I suppose. I mean, that's what he looks like. And, yeah, he's like a little tree stump log kind of thing. And, he carries around a leaf and a little backpack, of course. And the whole thing plays out. It's a fully 3D action platformer. So, you know, something that, like, what started with Super Mario 64 and, you know, has continued on into today. Yeah, you run around this, like, really lovely wooded area. And speaking of Mario 64, it very much might remind you of, like, an early platformer because there's almost no textures to be found. When you walk up to a wall, it's just a plain, like, brown wall. The floor, you know, there might be like a leaf graphic on a floor, but then you like maybe go over to a different kind of floor and it's just solid red. And, you just have no idea what's going on. The whole thing is stylized to basically be as like low detail as possible, but also it has like this shininess to it and it also runs at 60 frames per second. So it's actually really pleasant to look at despite the fact that there's, you know, it's very bare bones in terms of like the presentation. So, but you know, like I said, sorry, I was actually looking at it directly while I'm talking. I can't do two things at once. So you get into it and, of course it is reminiscent of the, you know, Nintendo 64 era and probably a lot of games of today in that you walk around and collect like fruits and things like that. But these actually serve a purpose because, and this is a touch that I liked in the game, is that you have your starting house, and as soon as you leave it, you can see all the shops that are selling all the stuff in the game that you're going to want and what's going to be required of you. So you can be like, you know, you start the game off with a double jump, of course, but there's like an item that's a triple jump and it costs, you know, this many hundreds of fruits. And so you're like, oh, okay, well, I have something to shoot for now. Which I actually quite like that because I don't like collecting things without there being some kind of reason, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you start off in the Woodle Village where you're supposed to basically, it's kind of like a tutorial, even though the thing is like open world. If you walk too far out of bounds, then it'll stop you and be like, you need to collect the three teardrops first and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the teardrops are the MacGuffin that you're seeking in this game. You need to find three in a level, and they're usually, of course, tucked away at the end of some kind of challenge. Wherein, you know, like the first three are in Woodle Village and you basically, you walk around for a while and you're just like kind of getting used to things and you're like, oh, I don't know where these other teardrops are. And then like, at first I was like, this game is not very good about giving you directions. And then I went back to my house to like look at something, and then I like started walking out again, and then I noticed these big ass signs with arrows on them that I wasn't following. So I was like, oh, okay, this game actually does tell you I'm just not a child, so I wasn't
user error.
Yeah, I wasn't looking for signs with giant arrows on them. I was looking for like quest markers and like people to tell me like where to go. I was like, I actually need more direction as an adult than I would have as a child. So yeah, once I followed those, of course, those take you up and up and up, and then you do like some jumping puzzles. And so the way that the jumping thing works is that you have your basic double jump. You also have a wall jump, and adding to that, the little leaf that the guy carries is both his weapon. You know, you just kind of whap enemies with it until they disappear. And if you push the X button, he holds it over his head. And if you're jumping, then that creates a kind of parachute effect. So you have a few different ways of, like, you know, getting your jump on, which I appreciate. And the other, you know, of course, you have to figure out how to do some moving platform type stuff with that kind of jumping. So it actually ends up being fairly challenging. And the game promises later on that there's like a whole bunch of like stuff that appeals to more hardcore gamers. Obviously, I didn't see that in the time I played the game. It just seemed a little more average to me. But I could definitely see where it can go that way. This game's a little deceptive in the sense that it's a lot more detailed than it appears to be when you start playing it, because you're just looking around at like these big, broad, you know, polygons, and you're like, well, there can't be much to this, and then it turns out there is. So, yeah, like, on top of the jumping, like I said, you attack enemies with your leaf. If you take damage, then it's okay, because, you know, your leaf shrinks down, and you're, you know, so that means that you've obviously taken damage, is that your leaf can no longer, like, whap. It's more like flick. And you can still defeat enemies that way, but if you get hit while your leaf is too small, then you get killed. And, well, not killed, but, or whatever. Yeah, you get viciously murdered and and have to start over at the last checkpoint. But there's no limit to lives, it seems. The game's, like I said, very straightforward. Like, there's no indicator of anything on the screen, actually. Like, when you pick up a fruit or something, then, like, the counter shows up and then disappears. Apart from that, all the information you might need would be either on the map or the inventory screens. And the map screen, by the way, only just shows you the general world map. It doesn't actually show you a map of, like, what you're doing, which is maybe the one thing that I'm like, I really wish this game had this, is an actual area map, you know?
Yeah.
And if it does have an area map, then I sure don't know how to access it, because it's not indicated anywhere in the controls. But I might just be dumb, because I've already failed on 2 points with this game. One, finding the prequel, and two, you know, finding the way past the tutorial dungeon. But anyways,
it's tough, all this stuff, man. It's, video games are tough, man.
Yeah, it's tough to like play, to learn how to play them. but yeah, like, you know, the thing is, if you do look at the world map, you will see that there's like 9 different areas that you can go to, and each one has a little teardrop indicator, because, you know, most of them, let's see, it's 8 of them. You have to get the 3 teardrops inside, and then there's also a blue fruit, which is a limited resource that you can trade for certain items. Interestingly, there's a shop that the blue fruit, like I said, is the rare stuff. So if you get like lost, or if you're really doing something challenging or kind of off the radar, then that's usually where you'll find them, because I guess the game maker planned on all this stuff. And like I said, they're limited, so you can use, you know, hundreds of them to purchase like really good items in those shops that are right next to your house. But there's one item that actually costs all of them, so you can't purchase anything else. You can only get this one item if you get every single one, and I'm very tempted by that. Oh. I don't even know what it is. It's actually kind of vague on the description, so I'm like, And of course, it's a costume that makes you dress like a blueberry.
Nice.
Yeah, but it has some special power, so I'm just kind of like, I'm very tempted by this. So yeah, lots of stuff to kind of tantalize. yeah, I was just kind of like figuring out. I was like, is this really a game for hardcore platformers, or is this thing more for kids? Because it really looks like a kid's game, but when you kind of dig into it a little bit, you see that it is made for, you know, pretty much anybody, including gamers who may have spent up to 1,162 hours on a different game mastering it.
Do you see yourself putting 1,100 hours into Woodle Tree 2?
Well, I don't know about 1,100 hours. I guess that's going to depend on how hardcore it gets. But hey, I mean, I would definitely play this enough to see it through to the ending.
Nice. Well, as it stands for $12.99, what's your verdict?
Yeah, $12.99. I think that considering this was made by five people, I pulled up the credits and there's five people credited with making this video game. I definitely think that it is a worthwhile purchase for platforming fans. Particularly people who like the cute aesthetic, and I think the younger lot would actually really enjoy it. Really, I mean, the only complaints I've really had about it is that I would like to see an area map in the game to kind of show some more stuff, and, or, you know, just get a better idea of where you are in comparison to where your goal is. Like I said, there is no such indicator. There's nothing on the screen, and everything else is done through menus. The only other thing, you know, I had some collision problems. I tend to expect that when it comes to any kind of platforming 3D game. I mean, Skyrim's like that, and it, you know, they made that with like $1 billion or something. So, you know, there's some platforming issues, but apart from that, I think this is a really solid game that is worth a check. Don't just skip it because it looks cute.
Awesome. Sounds good. Yeah, I enjoyed the first one. I'm hoping that they'll bring the second one over to Xbox. My biggest concern is the first game was a $5 game. This one is $13, and I'm wondering if it's worth that much more. I'm not sure what all was added to it. I know that he says it's an open world platformer where the first one was more stage based and this one has RPG elements, which you were mentioning, shops that you could visit and stuff like that. So it does sound like it's just a bigger overall game. So I'm excited to see this one hopefully come to Xbox and maybe PlayStation if it's not already. I don't know where it is. I don't know.
Well, yeah, on his website, he only mentions Switch. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when you get over the $10 for an indie game like this, then you do kind of have to give it a little extra scrutiny. But just considering what all work already went into the game when it was $4, and then he, like, completely, like, you know, added all this other stuff to it and, like, made it so much better. You know, I can see where he'd be asking a little bit more, but, makes you sense. Know. Yeah, I mean, $12.99, I spent it on worse for sure. Spent a lot more
on worse. We've all spent it on worse than that.
Yeah, for sure. So, I think it's good. Yeah, I mean, you know, if it seems like $12.99 is too much, then, I mean, God, catch a sale. I mean, Nintendo Switch stuff goes on sale so much.
It does. It's insane how many sales there are on Switch.
Some stuff gets so cheap, I feel guilty about buying it.
I saw a game for 19 cents.
I bought that game. I actually bought a game for 9 cents.
9 cents for a fucking game?
Yeah.
That's and ridiculous.
It was like 10 bucks originally. I don't know. It's you know, I don't know what the strategy is there, but I guess that adds up.
I guess so.
But I don't expect this is going to be a 19 cent game. I think it's a little better quality than that, but you know, like I said, I think it has my endorsement. I think it's fun and I'm going to actually play it some more.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. It has been another successful one in the books. Chris, thank you as always for coming on and chatting. Thanks again to Purnell, Jacob, and Royal for coming on and doing their thing as well. Music, going to play some stuff from the 1UPS because I'm in the mood for some 1UPS.
Heck yeah, get that funk on.
God damn right. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Oh, I thought those were my final words. Get your funk on, people. Stay funky.